Hey, welcome to the B-Side, Tuas Alliance Church podcast. This is episode number 3. Rhoda, do you ever think we'd make it to episode number 3?
I don't know, Steve. I don't know if we'd make it past episode number 1.
We almost didn't.
But people actually listen. That people actually talk to me about it, so I'm not sure how that makes me feel more nervous.
Or... Yeah, I thought it was just Melissa over, like, listening to it, like, 40 times, but no, it's actually...
It's actually different people, which is exciting.
Well, we're glad you're with us listening. I hope you have a good time and enjoy it, the podcast. Today is October 21, episode number 3. I am your host today. This is Steve. You can identify me through the only male voice in the room today. With us today is Rhoda,
hello.
As usual. We have some special guests. We've got Emma's with us.
Hi.
And we have Carly McMillan.
Hello.
And Alyssa Peppers.
Hi.
We have people asking, how come Paul's not on the podcast? And we've tried to get Paul on the podcast. He's a very busy man, but we just brought his daughters instead. So I was like, we're getting closer. We're making progress towards...
We're climbing up the Papworth ladder.
Towards Paul.
Sherry's going to be like, she'll be ready anyway.
Sherry will be on next week, maybe. That's our best. And Paul eventually. All right, but these girls are here today because today what we're going to do is talk about the upcoming Cambodia 2014 trip, and all four of them are on the team.
Woo-hoo!
Heading to Cambodia next summer, sort of July, August, I think is when it's
happening. Don't have confirmed dates yet, but it's most likely similar to what we did in 2012, so somewhere in the middle of the summer.
Middle of summer.
So
we want to talk about that. We want to ask them about that experience and just bring you up to speed on all that. So, Rhoda, why are we doing this trip? Why do a trip, a missions trip over to Asia like this?
Why do a missions trip? Well, Steve, you might have to talk a little bit more in the context of missions in general with our church. But I know people might wonder why we're going back to Place of Rescue. Why not go somewhere else? But Place of Rescue, before we ever went on a trip, was already one of our missions partners, people we had relationship with for many years. And so it was an extension when we were looking to do a missions trip. It really just made sense to build in with a partnership that was existing. And taking one group and then coming back is just building on that relationship even further with the kids, with the staff, within our church and overall. So that would be, in my mind, the main reason we would go back to Place Rescue.
Yeah, so for those who don't know, like in our church, we have four global partnerships, we call them.
Mm-hmm.
And they are, we partner with in Cambodia, so one of the focus countries, so to speak, mm-hmm. and with Place of Rescue as well as the work of Ratnac.
Yeah.
Both ministries that we've had many years we've supported and been partnering with. Well before my time, and then Germany with the Shereskis who were something like 25 or 30 years that they've been in Germany, and they are they're actually heading back in December, so we're going to be featuring them coming up in the next couple months. We got them on the podcast in November, and then
another
they're
reason
be,
to tune in, and not just hear you and me.
Yeah, I'm not going to tell you what date. That way, you have to listen every week, and sort of mystery. But they're heading off back to Germany in December, so we'll be hearing more from them in various contexts over the next couple months before they head off, as well as the church, the first church they planted there, Haus des Herrn, and now the new work that they're starting in Heidelberg. You know, we partner in Kenya with the Martins, Simon and Chantel. Yeah, we commissioned them and sent them to Kenya, almost a year ago, I think it was, like last January. December, January that they left and now they're just getting started in that work, so that's exciting. And then India, where we've partnered with the League Freedom Network and supported their work for a number of years. So those are sort of the four focuses. And we get people, organizations coming to us all the time wanting us to do their thing and partner in their project and their work. And we really felt that. You can either do a whole lot of things, engage them at a low level, maybe one way to say it, you can do a whole lot of things poorly, or we could do a few things really, really well. And so we, just as elders, as leaders in the church, we really felt it was important for us to build longer-term partnerships and to engage at a deeper level in those partnerships, and to that way we could see growth, and we could see, you know, supporting a group, church planters, missionaries, organizations over the long haul. We just felt that was a much better approach to be relational, as rather than just whatever came along, we would feature that a mission speaker. We'd never hear from them again, and there would be no, you know, how's it going? There's no accountability, there's no relationship, there's no progress. We just never hear from them again. So it's kind of been our approach to focus in and to do a few things really, really well. So,
That builds up on the relationship and building the churches large in relationship and less than taking Christian tourism.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're actually building long-term relationships.
So, for instance, we'll send, you know, we'll send a team. We want to do our trips. We'll go to visit our partners. And in a way that will support them, you know, we'd rather go when invited, so we're supporting them, not using them for an experience. Mm-hmm. And so, this is a small team of us went to Germany last fall. We were invited there to partner in the church and support them, and we got to go and be part of the church for the weekend and their retreat and preach the gospel and tour the country and learn more about Germany. We made that documentary and stuff. And then we've gone to Cambodia. This will be the second time.
Yeah.
So we're kind of building on that partnership from 2 years ago.
Well, and that also plays, Steve, into the question we sometimes get, both from within the church and also outside the church, is why, like, what will you be doing at this orphanage and aid center? Like, what will you actually be doing? And when we say we're going to teach an English camp, and people are like, oh, like, why would you do an English camp? And why would you not care for the kids? Why would you not be looking at... And Place of Rescue, that we have been invited from them, like, when we first looked at doing a trip, it was, we made sure that, are we really coming and offering something that they can't offer for themselves? And they very much said, yes, please, please come. It's really important that our kids, because of the disadvantage that they're at and maybe not having the same family structures, English can be a real asset to them when they leave Place of Rescue. Even whether they end up, a lot of them are going into House of New Dreams, which is an extension of Place of Rescue, which is college dorms for kids going to university. So many of them use their English to further their education. But even if the kids end up leaving Place of Rescue and becoming a tuk-tuk driver, they will still have an advantage in having stronger English. And so there are tutors who go for 3 months at a time, but they really feel that these English camps have been a big asset to them and something that they can't provide for themselves. And so so it's our privilege to go and serve in that way. They have house moms. They have people who care for the kids. We're not there to make the kids Western in any way. We don't interfere with their customs or traditions, but it's something that we have to offer. So that's why an English camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really want to serve. I mean, there's those three, for every trip we do, we talk about there needs to be three, all three of the relationships, or all three of the aspects need to be improved. The three being the people going, the people we are going to, and then the church as a whole. So by that we mean, you know, it has to be good for those who are going. It has to grow them, a transforming experience, challenge them in their discipleship and growth. It has to be good for the people we're going to visit. We're not just visiting and be a hindrance.
Yeah.
It has to go and be a blessing, to be a gift to them, to serve them in a way that they want to be served. And so we
don't want our help to cost them.
No. Yeah. No, that would be a failure of a trip. That doesn't achieve our purposes. And then thirdly, it has to be good for the whole church. Mm-hmm. For those who don't go. And it can't just cost them without any benefit. So in order for the elders to approve a trip, for the staff to get behind a trip, it has to see, you know, has to be good for all those three groups, and not just, you know, tourism, where it's good for those who go, but no good for the church, and no good for the people you go and visit. You're just bugging them.
Yeah.
So we want to avoid all that. So, but why do we do? You know, often people have been asking, why do we do short-term trips this way? I mean, like, it's pretty significant commitment. Mm-hmm. You know, like a lot of mission trips, short-term trips. You know, you meet at the airport, and that's the first time you meet the team, and then you fly out, and you're gone for a week, and you come back, and you never see each other again.
Yeah.
I've actually been invited on trips like this. And so, but for us, I mean, we had people applying over a year out and meeting monthly as a whole team, meeting weekly in discipleship partners.
Yeah.
Why the whole before and after? There's all sorts of...
So I'm co-leading this year's team back to Cambodia with Paul Papworth. I was a participant on the, or a team member on our last trip. And when I joined, it was very clear that you not only get to have this experience of going to Cambodia and love on Place of Rescue and Ratnak, but that there was a commitment, there was a greater sacrifice than that 2 weeks. And that was to be part of a team and part of a discipleship process. And that involves once a month meetings with the team. So we have like a potluck style lunch, and we get to know each other a little bit. And then we usually have a different topic that we talk about each time. So whether it's cross-cultural ministries or even just medical things that we need to take care of or working together as a team. We had the Cotters come last time and do a whole session on HIV and AIDS from their experience of doing missions in China. And actually that was a really great asset and guest to come in. So we do the team meetings once a month. We have fundraisers, several of those we work together as on a team. And we also have discipleship partners. So everyone on the team is partnered with someone else who they commit to meeting with once a week to reading through certain material that we hand out and discussing that and spending time praying together. And I know we started, like we're going next summer and we really kicked it off this September. And so it feels like a big commitment, but it actually flies by pretty fast. And I know for myself going last time, it actually became my favorite part of the whole process. And that might be different for different people, but there's books I never would have read if I hadn't been part of that. People I never would have gotten to know. Really working through issues with a group of people in what became a safe community context of that. It really became a smaller picture of what I think the larger church is supposed to look like. So I think there's huge blessing and advantage. And I think if we had just gone and shown up at the airport and then gone to Place of Rescue and Ratnak and experienced what we did and not have had that preparation time, that would have looked so vastly different. Like it just, I'm a big believer in that. You can tell I'm a big believer in the discipleship process now, which is also part of the reason that I agreed to co-lead the team back, because I found value in the trip, but I found almost more value in the effort put in before you go on the trip and what that can do.
Yeah, so we don't believe that just a cross-cultural experience on its own is value enough to do this type of thing.
Yeah.
That just the experience of it. Like some people would say, oh, missions, you know, I mean, I heard of a church recently where they were just judging the effectiveness of the missions department based on just how many people had an experience somewhere else. Didn't matter qualitatively, didn't matter partnerships, long-term growth. They just were kind of measuring it by number of people on a trip buzzing with the experience of the trip they went on. When we would argue that no, actually that approach of just go and experience something, come back is been proven largely a failure in the last generation or so. And instead what we want to do is be partnering with ministries over the long term and then seeing the trip as a discipleship opportunity for those who are going. And so it's not just a week or two away, but is a long-term growth and discipleship strategy and experience for over a year and a half, I guess it is. And then even afterwards, debriefing and following up and growing in that. And so we've been trying to cultivate over these two experiences a longer term growth experience that we would see people go on and grow and be challenged, not just in seeing a different part of the world, but seeing the gospel in a new way, growing in their love for Christ and others, growing in their faithfulness and obedience, and be missionaries, not there only, but here. So I think the big problem with mission trips is you go and serve Jesus over there and then you come back
and it's disconnected.
And it's so disconnected that it doesn't affect you at all. And so we're trying to actually disciple people to think as missionaries here and then briefly there and then back here again.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you and Paul have designed this experience over the longer term. So it is a big commitment, but it's because we're doing something different than maybe what has historically been, you know, the brief, quick, in and out, short term missions trip.
I think if people are wondering though too, like, oh, is it worth it? I didn't like talk to people who were on the last trip.
Yeah.
I mean, we have six of us returning. We wanted this year's team is a bit bigger going back, and we wanted to have balance. So we wanted to have some returning members to kind of build off of the former relationship and then new members, so that we're passing on that experience and building on it. So we have more new members than returning members, but we, like, getting returning members is not hard. And they know the commitment. Like, Alyssa, you're returning. So this is your second time going through the discipleship process. So do you feel that it still has value, or what would you say is something that impacted you last time through it, or that you find value in?
Yeah, I think it's really important just building, like, a close relationship with someone on the team. Like, I was with Shirley last time, mm-hmm. and I know I learned so much just meeting with her every week, and, like, I got to know her better than probably ever would have before. And then now this time I'm actually meeting with Emily Machnick, who is another youth member going on the team, and I get to kind of share what I learned with Shirley with Emily, which is kind of a cool experience.
Which really makes me excited, because is that not what, like, the whole discipleship process is supposed mm-hmm. to look like, right? So you are discipled so that you can turn around and disciple. Mm-hmm. So I get really excited about that. It's also interesting because the team that we went last time, there was 13 of us who went, and Bernard Barton, who many of you listening know, he is in his 80s, and he was our oldest, but definitely not the slowest member of the team. He has so much energy, I don't even know. He's there right now. He's back there. His heart is in Cambodia. He's there for like 3 months.
Yeah, all fall, yeah.
Yeah. So Bernard was on the team, and Alyssa, you were our youngest member going last time. So there was a huge, out of 13 members, we really had from, Alyssa, you were in grade 10 last year?
Grade 11.
You were
grade 11.
Grade 11 last year. And then, so you had just finished grade 10 when you went.
Grade 10 when I went.
Right, up to Bernard. So this was not signing up for a youth mission trip with all your buddies, right? Yeah, now, there's a few of you going this time, but it's still not an all-youth mm-hmm. team. So how do you ladies feel about that? Like, what do you think about it? About not being part of a all youth missions team, but being part of something that's cross-generational?
I guess I definitely feel like it's an advantage having different people from different ages. There's different people with different experience or different wisdom that they can share with us. So, yeah, I guess if it was just a youth missions trip, then the youth leader would be the one kind of teaching us along, but with all these different age people, it's more like more members of the team teaching other members of the team.
Yeah. And Alyssa, how did you find it actually, like, because these girls are excited about what it will look like or what it's starting to look like for them, but you actually experienced it. So what kind of dynamic or what did you come away with from being part of a cross-generational team like that?
Yeah, I just really enjoyed, like, connecting with different people from, like, all different ages from the church that I wouldn't talk to on a normal Sunday, and I don't know, just being kind of shy youth member like that.
You're not shy.
Normally just, like, talk to kids my age, but now on a Sunday I'll, like, talk to people who have been to Cambodia, and having that connection and experience with so many different people is pretty cool.
It was fun, too, because there's a few of us who've done things after the trip. Like, a play came out that she has a name that was about human trafficking, and a group of us went. And again, that same cross-generational representation mm-hmm. happens there. Or some of us went to see Mackenzie, one of our team members, was directing or in a play at Trinity. And some of us went to see that. And it's carried on a bit after the trip. So those are the other things I get excited mm-hmm. about that don't happen when you just mm-hmm. all get together to go for 2 weeks.
Yeah. Well, it's more like the church, right? Mm-hmm. I think we lose something when we segment age groups. Now, there's value to age-appropriate teaching and ministry, to have, you know, Sunday school classes or whatever, like, in certain age groups together, like aged people in different segments. There's value in that, but if that's all we have, I think the biblical model for ministry would be more family and cross-generational. And so if we're just sort of siloing all these age groups, we're really missing out on what the wider body of Christ can teach us, and older generations teaching younger generations and growing and learning from each other. So this trip and the team, both times now, has been more like what the church is and ought to be as far as ministry. So it's great. It's good. So Emma and Carly heading off for the first time. What why did you want to be part of the team? Like, what motivated you to apply and sign up for this?
For me, it was just really seeing like pictures and hearing a bunch of stories of from the people who had gone. It sounds like such a good experience, and really changing, and just the discipleship process as well. Just such a good experience to just learn so much more.
And yeah, like what Emma said, you come back and you hear people talking about the trip and all their experiences, and you see pictures, and you really wish, like, oh, I wish I could have been a part of that. And so yeah, I'm just really thankful that the team is going back again 2 years later, and I get to be a part of it.
Anything you're nervous about?
I always hear weird stories about what you guys ate, like tarantulas and like bugs and stuff.
Okay, well, we didn't all actually swallow those, but they are available to eat.
Yeah,
I take that opportunity.
That's probably what I would be nervous about, or yeah.
What about you, Emma?
I haven't really thought about being nervous yet.
You had two little kitties on the dance tour come and stay with your family.
Yeah, that was really awesome.
Yeah. So we should just take applications now. Like, we have them coming back in January, and they're all the cute,
yeah, the little guys.
8, 9, 10-year-olds. And we'll need billets for, like, 6 nights. Watch, we're going to get, like, a whack of emails now. I'll bill it. Yeah.
Yeah, like, late January.
Yeah.
Just before Missions Fest.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Just putting that out there. We'll remind you people about that again.
Yeah. All right, Alyssa, why did you want to go back a second time?
Really just, like, it was such a great experience the first time. Why wouldn't you want to go back? It was, like, connecting with those kids. Like, I want to see the kids again. And even just, like, the country. Like, I only just really got to see the surface. And I want to go back and learn more and, like, meet more of the people. And I don't know.
Well,
it's exciting.
So, like last time, what impacted you the most from the last time?
Well, there are so many things. I know.
No, I'll just pick one.
Just one.
It's like asking a girl to like pick only like one favorite pair of shoes or something.
Yeah, that's true. I think the biggest impact was working with the kids, and just you just really fall in love with them, and yeah, that was really life changing. But then there's like the hard stuff of like what they're dealing with and like what happened to them, like that made them like end up at the orphanage. That was hard to deal with, so like that had a huge impact on like just the whole experience of you're not just playing with cute kids, you're playing with cute kids who have a hard story.
Mm-hmm. That really hits you too, because mm-hmm. I mean, you really have a contrast when you're there. We don't stay at Place of Rescue or eat our meals there because we don't want to tax them in that way.
Yeah.
So we bus in and we bus out for lunch, but we're there for most of the daytime for a good solid chunk of time. But Place of Rescue, in contrast to what we see in other areas of Cambodia when we're driving through it, and when we got to visit the brothel district with Ratanak, you really realize what God is building in Place of Rescue is incredible, is a real beautiful thing, and the kids are wonderful. But I remember it hit me like halfway through the week, and I looked at my class, and I was like, there is not a single child in my class, I had little guys, who is not here because of a tragedy, right? Either mm-hmm. their parents are in the AIDS houses, they have AIDS, they've been abandoned, their parents have been killed or murdered, or they've passed away from AIDS, like every single child in my class, and some of them are HIV positive,
mm-hmm.
right? Not all of them, like not all the children are HIV positive, there's usually some kind of relationship to the disease through their family or whatever have you, but it just hit me halfway through the week. And a lot of things about being there really challenge your own understanding of God's provision, of God's greatness, of my own life, of what the things I tend to worry about, or the things I tend to be grateful for. So I don't think you can come back and not have it impact you, hopefully in a beneficial, longer-term way, in your relationship with God, and also what you do in your life with certain things, how you prioritize certain things. Yeah.
All right, best food that you ate in Cambodia. Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm a far more adventuresome eater than you are, Steve. So I probably had a lot. I don't know. I ate a lot of good food in Cambodia.
Yeah.
I was surprised. Were you surprised? I was surprised in Phnom Penh how much variety there was available to us at really inexpensive prices. So I felt like, I actually felt awkward, to be honest, true confessions on podcast B-side. The first couple of days, the things we're eating, I almost felt guilty because I was really expecting to rough it more food-wise on the first few days.
Yeah.
And I felt like we were eating well and a variety and really tasty stuff. But then I realized Blaine's plan, because when we actually were, when we go to Place of Rescue, it's like an hour and 20 minute bus drive from the city where we're staying. And every lunch time, we go about 10-15 minutes to the closest town to eat. That food was very different from the food in the city. So I realized what Blaine was doing when he like kind of set us up with the other food, kind of balanced. Because he didn't want us all down and out. They were no use to him, right?
Yeah.
But, I mean, I had great Cambodia food.
Yeah.
There was a French restaurant. There was, like, I had grilled cheese sandwich and fries one night.
The bugs were off the charts.
Yeah. Okay, there was a cart with bugs. We should post a picture. So I should get pictures.
You ate bugs. No.
I stuck a bug from my teeth. So it looked like I was eating a bug, but it was totally fake.
Yeah, you faked it. Paul and Ian and Cher.
No, Paul's totally faking it, too. He just ripped a leg off of a spider and hung it from his mouth so it looked like the spider's in the mouth. He totally faked it. Ian actually ate part of the leg.
Okay.
I think Ian was the only
one. He's the only one.
I think so.
Man of the match.
He was. He did it.
Alyssa, best food?
I would have to say, like, this actually was something that I had to challenge myself to try, was the frog legs.
Oh,
that's just the idea that it was frogs. Like, it was a really nice restaurant, and, like, they were delicious. It wasn't like scary side of the road food cart. It was like a nice restaurant. It was just the idea.
They were quality frog.
Yeah. Yeah. These weren't like your cheap street frog legs.
No, they were
these
nice.
These were high class.
They were, I think it was all in the sauce.
They were probably the best frog legs I've ever had.
They're probably your only frog legs you've ever had.
That, like I said.
Yeah, but I think probably just because I was so surprised at how good it was that it was my favorite.
Yeah, they're like,
and I was proud that I.
Yeah, like chicken wings, just a little more brittle.
Yeah, like smaller.
Yeah, not as
and smaller.
More dainty.
Yeah, yeah. You had to raise your pinky finger when you ate them.
Yeah,
but chicken wings.
That was pretty classy. So,
yeah.
Wow, yeah. I'm excited.
Yeah. It's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
Okay.
They're really awesome. Mango, passion fruit, those passion fruit shakes.
Well, because the fruit is very cheap.
Yeah.
Because they have like amazing tropical fruit everywhere. Yeah. So getting like a fruit shake.
Yeah.
Not shake, but blended.
Yeah.
Yeah, anyway.
They were
you know what I mean. Yeah, smoothie. There you go. Yeah, lots of, yeah, the amazing fruits and stuff like that. Yeah, it was really good. All right, most like heart-wrenching moment.
Oh my goodness. There were a number of them. There was two times I sobbed on the trip. One was the...
That you're willing to admit.
Yeah. Yes. It's true. I will tell you about Steve's sobbing moment. So one, of course, was when we finish. And Blaine prepares us before we go, when we get there, all through the week. He talks about the day we leave Place of Rescue. So that day we stay longer and we do like, we actually stay for dinner and we do this whole like potluck style dinner and we have this actual Cambodian dance with the kids where how white we are is really truly revealed. And I have Steve on video dancing, I'm just saying.
Mm-hmm.
So we should put that on my team.
Mm-hmm.
But then we have to say goodbye. And they line up the bus, and Blaine keeps giving the whole group a countdown, including the kids, and you kind of know it's coming, but eventually you have to say goodbye. And I can't speak for other ages, but I, again, had been involved with a younger kids group. And so, like, I noticed that the older kids groups would, like, cheer their leaders onto the bus, like, hey, you know, like, they built good relationships, but they would cheer them all on, and it was fun. All the youth were doing that, Cambodian youth. I had one kid holding on one arm, walking me all the way up. I had one kid crying over at a wall. Like, these are kids I built a relationship. I'm sitting in my chair on the bus looking down, and one of my little guys, Rex Mai, is like looking up at the bus. And yeah, that was brutal. But now people might be listening to that going, well, how is that good that you go? But Blaine and Marie, like, and they've talked about it through, and they talk the kids through it, and they've watched the kids after the fact. And they still feel that it's valuable. It's valuable lessons, and that's also part of like why we keep building relationship with the same place. Like, mm-hmm. that's part of that too. But I thought that would be the hardest moment, and it wasn't. Well, after rescue, when Brian McConaughey came out, and we went to the brothel district, and I was standing on the balcony of the pastor's building, and I looked down in the street, and like we're 4 stories up, and there's these 2 little girls, and they're between the little shanty houses, and they're looking up at us, and they're waving and they're smiling because we're a novelty, right? Especially that, like the mm-hmm. women. And when we had driven into that district, before we went, we had to sign all these papers. It was so different than rescue, right? Like when we went into the brothel district, we weren't to talk to the kids or touch the kids or, you know, like because they yeah. have a very different experience of Westerners. Yeah. And so yeah. we had signed all these papers, and then I'm at the top of this building, and there's these kids waving at us, and I'm like, I don't even know if I'm allowed to wave at them. So I'm asking Brian, like, are we allowed to wave and smile? And he goes, oh, yeah, that's fine. So I'm waving and smiling at them, and I'm like, how many kids in this community are abused or in danger of being abused or pimped out? And that, and like these, and he's like, there's no child who's either not in danger or isn't already. Mm-hmm. And we've just spent, it really actually impacted you on the depth of the meaning of the word rescue in place of rescue, right? And so that really messed with our heads for a while because you just, yeah. So I wept that night, but I also saw amazing contrast of what this district had been and what Brian told us what this district, he went in on maybe 5-6 years ago, and he had to go in with like a whole police squad and like protection, and now there's a pastor and his wife there, and they're building a relationship in the community. Mm-hmm. And we heard these most amazing redemptive stories of the work that God is doing out of the muck and the mire
yeah.
in the darkness. And it's almost like, to me, I feel like we live in a society where everything's gray a lot of the time there. And there I really felt like things were much more black or white. Like you saw really heavy stuff, and then you saw mm-hmm. the glory of God shining through on things in a remarkable way.
Yeah, they're buying the old brothel and yeah. planting a church inside it and watching the church grow and traffickers coming to Christ
yeah.
and filled with kids that are being trafficked. And
yeah.
yeah, just amazing to see that the disciples and the church that was growing there representing Christ in the darkest of places and the gospel going forth. It was pretty amazing.
And the stuff that this pastor and his wife, like we think sometimes ministry hears stuff, but I just have to think back to him and his wife and I go, oh my goodness. Yeah, no idea.
Yeah. All right, Alyssa, what was the most heart-wrenching moment for you?
Well, it's going to sound like I'm stealing one of the answers, but they're pretty much the same. Like, the first one was definitely saying goodbye to the kids, and, like there was this one little girl in my class, and she was pretty quiet, but then just on that last day, she was kind of, like holding my hand all day and, like, talking to me more than she would, like, throughout the week, and then like even just in those last few hours, like I felt like I connected with her that much more, and then saying goodbye was that much harder. And that was pretty terrible. Saying goodbye was hard, but and then just like after that, I didn't actually go to the brothel district, but just in talking about like the things that go on there and kind of having my eyes open to even just things happening in Phnom Penh, was really hard, and I like really felt like connected to girls like my age who are dealing with that like all the time, every night, and that if I lived in Cambodia, that could be me. Yeah, and that was really hard, and I really struggled with that, just knowing that that was going on.
So what was then like most encouraging moment or experience through it all?
Just knowing that like there's people working against that darkness, and that mm-hmm. place of rescue is rescuing. Just like Rhoda said, it deepens your appreciation for the work that's going on there, and it gives you hope that like maybe one day it won't be a problem and that we can overcome it. Would be incredible, and that's all through God and the work that he's doing there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good. We have a fundraiser. We're going to be hearing a lot more about the Cambodia team.
Yeehaw!
Fundraiser coming up. So tell us about that.
Well, it's going to be a harvest hoedown, folks. So get your Western duds on. I'm actually still not a Western girl. I'm excited about this because I know a lot of people who are excited about it. I'm not a square dancer by any means. I'm really encouraged because as soon as we announced we were doing a trip back to Cambodia, before we even had a team, Paul and I had some folks from the church who are
some
not
folks.
Yeah. So folks from the church who came to us and said we would like to help throw a fundraiser
for y'all. Yeah.
For y'all. Yeah. Yeah, totally. And I mean, like, how that to me also shows a continuity between the last trip and this trip within the church of people who aren't even going.
Yeah.
Right? So that I was super excited about that. Then they said hoedown and I went, oh, I don't know how to screw that, but they promised they would help coordinate it. And there's a professional square dance caller coming. He apparently does this for other churches in Trinity Western. And it's very, when I say it's family-oriented, it's good for, we're saying youth to young at heart, because it's going to be an hour where it's not really a great time for little kids to come, but it's family-appropriate in the sense of, good, clean fun. And we'll be having this square dance caller. We're going to have an auction. We're going to have some door prizes. We're going to have snacks. And it's Saturday, November 16th. So you have a lot of time to find your Western duds. And it's from 7 to 10 p.m. Emma, how much are the tickets?
$15.
That's right. And you can get them from?
Anyone on the Cambodia team.
Or anyone? The church office. You can get them from the church office too. And the proceeds are going to go to, obviously, fundraising for the 2014 Cambodia team. And so I think even if I've heard from some people who have never square danced before, and when I say some people, like the youth are pumped about this, and I know a lot of adults are pumped about this, because apparently some parents in our church have attended something that this guy's done before, and they ended up having a total blast and are so excited to help throw this. So I think it's going to be fun. So get your tickets, please. And also, we are really looking for donations for the auction and door prizes. So if you have a connection to, you have a business, you have a connection to another business, we're looking for new items or services, please, please let us know. That would be fantastic. You know, Steve's already representing today at our podcast. I thought he was wearing his hoedown shirt, but apparently it's his indie rock shirt. I'm not sure how he feels about me calling it a hoedown shirt. We'll see if I still have a job later this year.
I'm more of an urban guy.
I think you're just representing for the hoedown, Steve. Yeah. Anyway, that's our hoedown information.
Sweet.
It's coming out fast.
November 16th, yeah.
Yeah.
Get your tickets.
Yeah.
All right. Thanks for listening to the podcast and tuning in this week. Remember to send in your questions to bside@tawasanalliance.org. We got some questions we want to get to next week, but send in your questions. We'd be happy to answer your questions about the sermon, about what's going on in the church, about any sort of theological topic, issue you want to talk about, and we'd be happy to answer those. You can ask Rhoda what she's wearing for Halloween, anything like that. And we'd love to hear from you, get your feedback, and hope you have a great week. Thanks for listening. Take care.